I call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 3:19 p.m. Wednesday, March 9th. Members present, Representatives Kaufman, Shiragi, Snyder, Sponholz, and myself. Today we have action on House Bill 372 and a first hearing on House Bill 363. I hope we can get through 372 quickly. This is Representative Tuck's bill. Mike Mason is here. If committee members have any questions, are there questions for Mike Mason? I'm not seeing any. We do have one amendment to consider today, Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, I want to move amendment number one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
All right. So the intention of amendment number one is to remove from the bill an allowance that individuals under 18 who are employed by a nonprofit organization are exempt from the minimum wage statute. It's our understanding that that's not actually being used in law right now. And the intention in the bill is to make sure that people are being fairly compensated for their work, and that was the underlying rationale.
Okay. Do committee members have questions about this amendment? I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. At this time, I'm going to open public testimony on House Bill 372. Are there people in the room who want to testify on House Bill 372? Seeing none, I don't see anyone online who wants to testify on House Bill 372, so public testimony is closed. Is there a motion to move House Bill 372?
Co-Chair Fields, I move House Bill 372, version 32-LS1588/A from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, hearing no objection, House Bill 372 as amended has passed from House Labor and Commerce. We will circulate the paperwork while moving on to the next bill. Next up is House Bill 363, broadband, from Representative Edgman's office. Thank you, Representative Edgman, for being here and presenting the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, really appreciate the opportunity to bring a very substantive topic in front of the committee and a bill that would put into place a framework to allow Alaska to be best positioned to really compete for an unprecedented amount of money in broadband that came about largely through the Infrastructure Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act that was signed into law on November 15th. And if you take a look and examine the bill in its entirety, you'd be lost for weeks because it's huge. And even the broadband section itself is quite significant. And I've done my best to immerse myself in it to the extent where I can be conversational with the committee. But what's really apparent to me is that, just a few weeks ago, to give a sense of how rapidly evolving not only the Infrastructure Act is in terms of our understanding as members of the legislature and the general public, but the broadband component itself also is taking shape seemingly right in front of our eyes. And just sort of to go back a little bit, the Broadband Task Force, which you'll hear more from the chairman and the chairman of the technical and the subcommittees who we presented you later on, they finished their work in early November. In December, we had discussions about how to elevate this issue in front of the legislature. We settled on having a hearing in front of the House Finance Committee, which took place on February 1st. It was nearly a two-hour hearing. And it was at that point where we decided we need a bill. We need to put all these recommendations, many of them very well thought out, of course, that the product of some 32 meetings with the task force and so forth. But we need to put in the statute the guidelines that will, again, best position Alaska to be a player, a competitor with this unprecedented amount of money. Somebody was just telling me, in fact, before I came up to testify before the hearing started, that in a normal year, the rural broadband programs at the Fed run would be about $4 billion a year. And when you look at the entirety of what the Infrastructure Act proposes, it's $65 billion in the BEAD Act, Broadband Equity Access Deployment Money, otherwise known as acronym BEAD money, is $42 billion and $450 million. So In order to do this right, we proposed we've introduced House Bill 363, which would, you know, basically do three things. On one hand, fairly straightforward in its construction. On the other hand, as you go through the process of considering the bill, there's going to be a lot of elements that are going to be in play, of course. But the bill would propose to, in statute, Title 44, create language for the Broadband Task Force for the Broadband Parity Adjustment Fund, but as well the Broadband Advisory Board, sort of three components that would help position Alaska to be at the table when the first swath of money, each state receives about $5 million, which will be coming through our appropriations process, as I understand it, through a separate bill from the governor. But, you know, in conjunction with this bill, being able to set up the broadband office and the other infrastructure necessary to get Alaska, again, positioned to receive this or to compete for this huge amount of money that's out there. I wanted to say a few other things. You know, again, this isn't a lengthy bill. It's 4 or 5 pages in length, and that's deliberate because ordinarily when you're looking at putting something in a motion in the legislature, that creates a whole new section of law. In fact, this bill would reside in Title 44 between the Alaska Forest Product section of the statute book and the Alaska Microloan. And we worked with our legislative legal, and as best we could ascertain, there's scant references to broadband in state statute, but there is no sort of statutory construct that would allow Alaska, with or without this type of unprecedented funding level, the opportunity to you know, stand up a broadband program. We don't have that in Alaska law. And I could tell you as well that some of that is taking place back east as well, as the NTIA and others are scrambling for broadband expertise and broadband employees and so forth to be able to work with the states in terms of putting in you know, the various programs throughout the states. I think it's no secret to all of you that I represent a rural district. I represent Southwest Alaska. We have, in some places, adequate broadband. And in other places, we have fiber optic cable being, subsea fiber optic cable being put in place to the lower part of my district in Aleutians that will provide hopefully high-speed internet opportunities to where just a few short years ago you couldn't send a text. And so this whole notion about broadband and the opportunities we have in Alaska really caught my attention. I've known a lot of the Broadband Task Force members over the years. I had the opportunity to sort of listen to some of the hearings to get acquainted with the whole effort. And I think I'd like to sort of bring my introductory comments to a close by touching on a few final points. One, that the bill is, as it's in front of the committee, would sunset in about 10 years' time, June 30th, 2020. Or, oops, I think that's it. No, that is right, 2020. The fiscal note in front of the committee, which the Department of Commerce will speak to, alludes to federal funds, not state funds. But again, we need to have the broadband office up and going in some capacity in order to be, you know, the repository for those federal funds. And I think the last point, and this is a critical point, and I've, you know, been in and around the legislature for a long time. I respect the committee process. I believe bills get better when they go through the committee process. I'm not here to represent that this bill is, you know, 80% complete, 90% complete, 100% complete, whatever, because every bill gets refined as it goes through the process. But we could, in my office, carefully constructed this bill so that it would maintain the broad support that the Broadband Task Force has in its report, including support from the governor's office. You know, I'm not going to say that it's universally endorsed by the industry, but I think it does have fairly broad support amongst industry members. The not-for-profit community has come forward, those that we've been in contact with in support of the bill. And we've also had various other public entities say that they like the fact that the bill is, you know, maybe as unadorned as it is right now, because you can always add stuff to bills, accomplishes the basic purposes that it needs to accomplish in order to position Alaska to receive all that money that we hope to get by way of, you know, the 7 major federal programs and some other sort of prescriptive nature of some additional funding that's out there. When Senator Murkowski was in Juneau, I think it was 2 weeks ago, February 18th, she gave her joint address. She said that at a minimum, we could expect $1.2 to $1.5 billion vis-a-vis the programs that are in place. But that's the floor and not the ceiling. But I'm going to end my remarks, Mr. Co-Chair, by just saying that it's my hope that the committee can take this bill under consideration. We can act you know, in a more expedited fashion and move it along, if at all possible. And also to keep in mind that if this bill gets, you know, if it becomes a recipient of a lot of change, if it's you know, bills easily can start out at one sort of level and then morph into something more significant, we're going to lose, I think. And this is, and again, I don't want to tell the committee what, you know, what you should or shouldn't do, but I think we've got a political construct here that can work and help get us through the process. And Mr. Co-Chair, I'll just end my rambling comments there and certainly be available for any questions. And whenever you or the committee are ready, I'll ask my staff to come up and go through the sectional analysis of the bill.
I think it might make sense. Thank you, Representative Edgemont. I think it might make sense to do that sectional and actually do the invited testimony and then ask questions, just because some of that invited testimony might answer questions people might have, if that's okay with you.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Amory Lee Lake, staff to Representative Edgemont. As Representative Edgemont said, the bill creates a brand new section of statute and is based on the Governor's Task Force report and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which I will be referring to as IJA. And my plan was to go through the sectional and point out which parts are from the task force and IJA, or which parts are just the task force, just to give you some context. Section 1 of the bill creates a new section, AS 4433910, to establish the Office of Broadband in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and details the Office of Broadband's purpose, powers, and duties to include: expand broadband access and digital equity in the state through federal and local partnerships while maintaining technological neutrality with prioritization of service expansion in the following order: unserved areas, underserved areas, and anchor institutions. That's both from IJA and the task force. Develop a procedure for adoption of broadband service maps that incorporates the forthcoming Federal Communications Commission, FCC, maps in accordance with the Federal Broadband Data Act, which was passed in 2020 and stands for the Broadband Deployment Accuracy and Technological Availability Act, and a process to challenge the accuracy of broadband service maps used to determine availability and adequacy of service, both from IJA and the task force. Streaming permitting processes and encourage streamline permitting processes and encourage development of in-state workforce to facilitate expeditious and substantial infrastructure deployment. That's a recommendation from the task force. Establish a grant program and broadband parity adjustments, which are both from the task force and governor's office comments to the NTIA, which is the National Telecommunication and Information Administration. A little more detail on the grant, broadband parity adjustment. AS 4433915 establishes the Broadband Parity Adjustment Fund. The BPAF, as we're referring to it, is a separate fund in the Treasury which allows for grants to offset the costs of broadband services for eligible consumers. Funds can come from money appropriated by the legislature, federal funds, and interest earned on the fund balance. It will also, the bill will review and consideration of the recommendations of the Statewide Broadband Advisory Board, established under AS 4433920. The board is also a recommendation of the task force, but a strong requirement of IJA is it requires community consultation. And so the Statewide Broadband Advisory Board was put in place to help with that community consultation. It's composed of 9 members appointed by the governor and commissioners from Department of Commerce and the Department of Education and Early Development. It was created to provide an inclusive process for a broad number of stakeholder groups, including tribal, local government, school districts, the university, healthcare sector, industry, and consumers. Section 2 of this bill is a sunset. The act sunsets on June 30th, 2030. This was both the task force recommendation, and it allows time to complete IJA projects. Section 3 of the bill establishes an immediate effective date under AS 01-10070C.
Okay, thank you. Let's proceed with invited testimony. First up is Hallie Bissett, who was the chair of the task force. Ms. Bissett, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to be here and honored to have chaired such a dynamic task force. As Representative Edmund said, it was 32 meetings, and it was a lot of hard work and a lot of long hours, and I just want to thank Christine and Nils. I saw sitting there in front row in the audience. Without them, I couldn't have done half the work we got done with this report. I'm really happy. What a good problem to have, right? $1.5 billion baseline coming in for broadband. I'm happy to answer any questions you have about the report. I was told to keep my remarks short. I'm absolutely in support of HB 363. As written, but as Mr. Edmund said, if you have questions or want to talk about amendments and what that might do, you have some really good subject matter experts in the audience, and I can answer what I can in terms of working with tribes and that sort of thing. I think if I just wanted to leave you with one impression, it would be that this fund to close the gap of affordability is really important. It is going to be required going out into the future. As once the infrastructure is in, you still have to maintain microwave towers that are on top of mountains and these sorts of things. And so that fund is going to be really important to keep our infrastructure going well out 20, 30, 40 years from now. So thank you so much for inviting us, and I'll yield my time to the next presenter.
Great. Next up is Nils Andresen. Mr. Andresen, please come forward and give your testimony.
Hi. Thank you. For the record, Nils Andresen, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League, and otherwise a humble task force member. It was a pleasure serving on this task force, both to learn so much about broadband and to have a role in shaping a lot of what emerged out of the policy side of things. Most of which is in this bill, and AML is certainly in support of this bill as written. Knowing that we're taking the first steps as part of a long-term process, I know the sponsor referenced the work to come over these next 10 years, the amount of funding and effort at the federal level, but this package in front of you that I hope this committee will be supportive of really gives the state an opportunity to set its own direction. An Office of Broadband Deployment does just that, gives you a vehicle to meet the needs of Alaskans, to respond to federal priorities, but to see those implemented at a local level and statewide. It was really important to the policy committee, I think, not just to have an office, but to have that office intersect with and be responsive to and engaged with an advisory board that was truly representative of Alaska and Alaskans. So it's encouraging to see that as a major component of this bill. And that goes a long ways toward the goals of inclusivity and to meeting just the diversity of the state that the policy committee and the task force recognized. I'll note that on the parity adjustment, I think this has been a recommendation of all previous task forces on broadband, so it's not new in any way. It builds off some of the same concepts that were used these last few years with the Emergency Connectivity Fund that the federal government utilized to get funds into the hands of Alaskans who were paying and are continue to pay a lot for these basic needs. So I'm hopeful that not only is this constructed, but that there's an opportunity to fund it in a way that's meaningful, and that it's part of our transition toward greater broadband infrastructure deployment across the state. I think I'll close with this again is a first step. It's taking into account a lot of unknowns, and it's leaving open the opportunity for you in future years for us as Alaskans to work together toward meeting other challenges and opportunities as they emerge. This basic structure gives us all the ability to meet Alaskans' needs right now and all the ability to be responsive into the future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Andreessen, for being here. Next up invited testimony is Christine O'Connor. Ms. O'Connor, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Co-Chair Fields. For the record, my name is Christine O'Connor. I am, the Executive Director of Alaska Telecom Association. I'm also a kid from rural Alaska. So this task force and this infrastructure fund and Office of Broadband are incredibly important just because bringing broadband, everyone needs it, but when you're in rural Alaska and you don't have broadband in this day and age, it's just there's things you absolutely cannot do that you need to do. So I'm really pleased to support the bill. I was very honored to be a part of the task force with Hallie and Nils and many others. Hallie mentioned 32 public meetings. Many of those meetings, all of Hallie's meetings, were 2 hours long. So this was extended, and it was time well spent with passionate voices speaking up for future-proof, robust networks for rural Alaska. So I did want to reiterate what Representative Edgman and Amory mentioned, that this bill is completely framed, as I've reviewed the language, from the task force recommendations, and it aligns with the federal infrastructure bill. So we don't have anything in here that's going to kind of take a side road where we won't be able to immediately begin working with the infrastructure bill as those funds are already headed our way on the NTIA timeline. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions about the task force or the infrastructure bill or anything. If I can answer it, I'm happy to do that. Thank you.
Okay. Do committee members have questions for the bill sponsor or invited testifiers, or would people like to hear an explanation of the fiscal note before we go further? I see Representative Kaufman has a question.
No questions. Through the chair, I'm as I look at the bill, what I'm hearing is it sounds like in the past discussions that there was a good collection of people with necessary competencies there. I don't see anything in the bill that would drive it to be competency based. What I see I see like a good consumer representation, but from a lifetime spent in capital projects, when you're looking at a problem statement, you're trying to find the solution to it, you have to make sure that you understand the end users' needs, demands, etc., and they have a place in the process. It's referred to as the voice of the customer. You want to have the voice of the customer in the room, but you also want to make sure that you have the right assortment of people that can accurately assess, as you said, the future-proof the solution, choose the right technological solution, and be sure that it's really the correct system or combination of systems, the compatibilities, all the technical things that the cost, value, everything, the whole list. Do we have enough in this bill to be sure that we go there and that we we don't end up with a room of full of well-intentioned people, but not necessarily those that are have the technical competencies that are going to be required to assure that we make the right decisions. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Kaufman, or would you like me to? Okay. Two things on that. You're exactly right that the advisory board is really the users, and I kind of consider them the Uber users. These are the education, the different tribal voices, healthcare that can speak to what is urgently needed. The task force recommended, and it would be able to happen under the bill, that there would be a technical subcommittee, and that's where you would bring in the expertise across industry that would report back to the advisory board. But the other piece, more importantly, I think what you're asking about is really project management. How are we going to ensure this is done well? And that will be done through the Office of Broadband Deployment in partnership with NTIA, which is right now writing detailed rules for how states, each state, has to provide a five-year deployment plan with a lot of detail. And before funds are released, NTIA reviews and has to approve that plan. The infrastructure bill itself allows for an iterative process of a back and forth between each state and NTIA until the states are happy and NTIA is satisfied that it will be done properly, like you're referring to.
Representative Benjamin, would you like to add to that before we go to follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. You know, this might be something that the committee may want to consider actually putting language in the bill that refers to a technical subcommittee of sort that I think aligns with the question that you're asking. But it's interesting not having very much knowledge, you know, maybe having a tenth of the knowledge that somebody in the industry actually has, but it strikes me that you look at the sort of waterfall of agencies involved at the federal level, the NTIA, Federal Department of Commerce, the Department of Agriculture, USDA program, the FCC is involved, the General Accounting Office is involved at some level, all the way, you know, under the sort of the auspices of serving unserved areas and underserved areas. So we're going to have to be in a position to prove up to get a lot of this money to meet certain metrics, if you will, that are also going to have to flow through the broadband deployment office. They'll be working with the broadband advisory committee as well as other sort of partners around the state. So I think it'll be something that the committee will want to take a look at. We proposed 11-member broadband advisory board in the bill, 11 being a number that seemed to work. It's not maybe too big in some respects. Maybe you want to contemplate adding to that or whatever you might want to do. But that's the whole notion that we first start with putting the office together and then we build things out based on what the federal law requires us to do.
Representative Kaufman, I was later going to announce an amendment deadline of Tuesday at 3 p.m., which gives us about a week to work on this. So if you're interested in sort of a technical committee like Representative Edgman mentioned, then that should be enough time to work with the bill sponsor and work with us to see if we can come to consensus on something. Did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. Follow up on this. Thanks through the chair to the bill sponsor. I appreciate that. I think it's critical. When we say project, many times people think of really what is the very end stage of a project. The true beginning of it is way over here with the problem statement and making sure that we select the right problem, come up with the right solution out of the many technical possibilities, you know, economic possibilities out of all that. And again, is what I did before I came here was try to make sure the capital projects go well. And what I've seen, you point at the wrong problem, you choose the wrong option, and then later on you're having trouble and you build something that doesn't add value. And I think it's a critical risk that we face with the capital project money that's coming. We have to make sure we deliver value with it. So I appreciate what your comments about, you know, the getting that technical expertise in it. The line of thought that I have is similar to what I did when we were working on Speaker Stute's HB 63 for oversight of the Marine Highway, of trying to get competency-based rather than, you know, constituent-based is one thing, but if you can do constituent-based with competencies, it's an even stronger package. Thank you.
Representative Sponholz had a question.
Yeah, thank you. So in looking at the task force recommendations, they recommended the broadband parity adjustment, as was referenced fund earlier. And I'm wondering, most of the funding for this is going to come from the federal government, which is really helpful given the massive capital need and investment we need in this. I'm wondering if there's been any additional information that's been gleaned about what fund capitalization might look like, whether or not there are any federal funds available for that, or if that's going to be a state obligation to capitalize that parity adjustment fund.
Co-Chair Sponholz, we know that the funding is coming through the infrastructure funds broadband flows, and there are multiple programs. There's $42 billion in broadband equity access and deployment, the BEAD program, which is targeted toward deployment for unserved areas, but also allows flexibility for adoption and affordability. There is also the digital equity program that's precisely toward getting people more supporting access in a fair way. So various programs could be used to support specifically the broadband parity adjustment. And that's something that I think would be developed. It would have to be developed and approved through NTIA, because the entire plan has to be approved through a grant process between the office and NTIA.
Yeah, I think that that's really helpful. And I think it's one of the reasons that we wanted to have that hearing earlier this session with the NTIA, and really underscore the kind of hyper ruralness of our state and how important it is that we work with our federal partners to continue to educate our friends at the federal government about how costly it is to provide equity and access in the state of Alaska. I know that it's a top priority of the Biden administration to provide equitable access to broadband. And we know this is a really important part of Native self-determination in rural Alaska and ensuring economic, diversification of our state, as well as access to education and healthcare. But our folks in Washington, D.C., don't always understand what rural means in Alaska, and sometimes underestimate the cost. And so I think it's really important that we identify as many funding streams for that equity fund as possible.
Representative Snyder had a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Representative Edgman, can you help me understand just a little bit? I was familiarizing myself with the order of prioritization and the definition of anchor institutions, but then looking over at the Broadband Parity Adjustment Fund and the eligible beneficiaries there do not include school districts, libraries, or healthcare facilities, which are included in the definitions of anchor institutions. Can you help me understand the rationale behind that?
Christine, do you want to take first crack at that?
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Through the chair, Representative Snyder, this was coming out of the task force, and I think Nils and I could both speak to it. The task force said that we needed this broadband parity adjustment, but the reason schools, it sounds counterintuitive, right, to exclude schools and healthcare clinics. The reason those were excluded is because there are separate pre-existing federal programs paying for their broadband, for the vast majority of their broadband and connectivity costs. So we didn't want to layer on limited funding through the BPA for something that was really already being paid for by federal programs.
Thanks. Representative McCarty.
Thank you. Sorry for being late. You probably shared everything I'm going to ask. The first question is to the chair. Representative Edgman, maybe you can address this here, is the page 4 talking about the council. So it has 11 people. The commissioners are voting members of it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Go, Chair.
So there's already brought up the discussion of having technologically knowledgeable individuals on that, and I'm not seeing a strong amount of technologically informed people on this committee, and I'm wondering if we could potentially kick it to 13, and those other added two would be other people in the industry or entities in the industry that represent that technology?
Well, through the co-chair, any end product, of course, is going to involve the industry. So the industry's participation is, whether it be fiber optic, whether it be microwave transmission, whether it be satellites, partners, they have to be an integral part of this. And, you know, hence the, in responding to Representative Kaufman's points earlier, you know, the committee probably will want to take a look at creating a technical committee at a minimum. And, you know, the 11 members on the broadband advisory task force at this point, it also occurred to me after we sort of got the bill drafted that, you know, a standard practice is to also have, you know, ex officio members from the legislature, one from the House, one from the Senate. Not that that's going to bring you industry technological know-how, mind you, but no, I take your point as a valid point. It's something that needs to be discussed and to be considered.
Okay. Different question?
Sure.
So the other question is, it was shared with me that the federal guidelines is still yet to be sent to us, the mapping. What's the term for that?
Through the chair, the broadband data collection is what the FCC is calling it.
Okay, thank you. And so it's my understanding that that until we receive that guidelines from the federal, we don't really have a strong indication of what we're supposed to be doing in the office in the planning. And I'm concerned, and you could address this, concerned that we get an office going and everybody's like busy putting together an idea for this broadband. And then we get the guidelines from the feds and all that was for naught, because now we got to do it completely different. And we've wasted the energy. Great people, but we've wasted energy.
Through the chair, Representative McCarty, the Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA, is pretty prescriptive. It tells states in pretty strict terms what they will prioritize. First priority is unserved areas. It tells them that they have to have extensive community consultation. It tells them what some of their eventual evaluation criteria will be. It tells them they have to have a 5-year deployment plan to reach every unserved location in the state. So to Representative Kaufman's point about what is your goal, what is your target, the IIJA itself says that is what the State Office of Broadband has to deliver. That's a very big lift. There, to my knowledge, there has never been a deployment plan to reach every location in the state. So that is something that can easily be being worked on while we wait on the mapping.
Okay. Thank you.
I might ask a question, and then we'll go back for more questions if there are questions. Although, Representative Froggy, did you? Okay. There have been questions so far about technical expertise, and maybe Ms. O'Connor, you could just talk about who are broadband providers and educate us on the overlap of local governments, tribal governments that may also have overlapping areas served by local cooperatives or municipal providers of telecom services. Could you just provide a little bit more detail about who's out there working on expanding broadband right now, and to what extent are those cooperatives versus municipal telecoms versus commercial companies? Thank you.
Great question, Co-Chair Fields. So the Alaska broadband industry, it's the telecommunications industry technically, but we are so focused on broadband, is diverse. And the one word that always comes to my mind right now is there is so much momentum. We've had over $100 million in ReConnect grants awarded to over half of my members to build middle mile and last mile infrastructure. That's just in the last 2 years. So the broadband providers, many are in the room here today, all members of ATA. We have over half of our members are community-owned cooperatives, which is really important to understand right now as we look at the priorities of the IIJA and the Biden administration is for that community touch, and particularly for serving tribal and native communities. Any of our cooperatives are owned by the communities they serve. Those communities are native communities, like my hometown. Those are native-owned telecommunication companies already operating and deploying broadband. So that's half of the providers in the state. We have a municipally owned provider that has an amazing network in Ketchikan. It's a division of the city of Ketchikan. We have an employee-owned company, Alaska Power and Telephone, owned by the employees themselves. We have a couple smaller, a family-owned company. We have multiple privately owned companies, and of course we have our very large carriers, which are also immersed and enmeshed in the communities they serve. Their technicians, their management, everyone involved in providing service are in living and parts of our communities in Alaska. So that's my overview, and I think it is helpful to put context around the kind of coordination that the Office of Broadband will need to do across all of these providers. And that's apologies to anyone watching the video feed if I've left someone out, but that's a broad overview.
Thank you. Representative Sponholz, and then other members can ask more questions.
Yeah, thank you. I think, you know, that there's a nice theme of interest in technical and industry engagement that's, you know, rising in the committee today. And I think that, you know, as we approach that, I'm cautious about the risk of the legislature picking winners and losers by putting an artificial sort of number on the number of industry participants that would be on the task force or the advisory board. I'm sorry, we're calling it. And I think we want to make sure that we hear from all members of the provider community and stakeholder community. And it's one of the reasons I'm intrigued by the broadband task force model, where there was a subcommittee that was really broad. And I'm wondering if we could hear from either the chair of the task force or the technical subcommittee chair, maybe both, about the way that worked and whether, you know, how that could be applied as a model to this advisory board.
Ms. Bissett.
Yeah, Representative Small, through the chair, I'm sorry if I'm echoing a little bit. My broadband is not very good. We need better infrastructure out here.
You sound good here.
So the subcommittees were really, really valuable because we were able to separate it into technical and policy, and each of which meetings, like Christine mentioned, were 2 hours long. So they did a really deep dive into the technological aspects of broadband, and we did a really deep dive into policy. So we even invited other states that had broadband offices, for instance, from Maine and I believe Montana and one other state, where we were just kind of looking at best practices. And Christine had a very extensive process to look at every type of technology that is out there, whether it be microwave, satellite, mesh. I still don't really know what that is or understand what it is, but it's pretty cool. And I think the broadband advisory group, the task force, got a really broad understanding of the industry. I mean, I learned more than I'll ever want to know about broadband. It was like drinking from a fire hose, but the committee structure made it a little bit more palatable.
Co-Chair Sponholz, if I may add, I was the chair of the technical subgroup, and I think that model was very effective and it could be used again. And what we did is I was the only actual telecom person on the technical subgroup, but we pulled in all the experts from across industry. The members here, the telecommunications providers here, all gave information, presentation, answered questions from the technical subgroup. So I think having that kind of structure to allow pulling in the expertise as you need it is very important, and it contributed to a really good task force product.
Right. For the record, Nils Andreasen, wanted the opportunity to maybe respond to a couple of questions, but also I think broadly to the concepts of policy and technical action. I think reflecting from the work that the policy subcommittee did, which I was kind of integrally involved in, the policy side and really the advisory board's role is all about vision and goal setting and how do we meet the needs of Alaskans. So the fact that the advisory board is representative of users to some extent, it's from users that we really understand the challenges that Alaskans face. It would also be a mistake to say, I think, that users don't also have the technical ability to be really expert contributors to the technical space. A lot of what we learned on the policy side was from the technical subcommittee, and it was the university, and it was the healthcare system. It was people who were very technically able to understand how their systems benefit from and need to respond to, you know, broadband very generally. So I think there's a lot of capacity within the advisory board as structured to be able to contribute technical expertise. And that's not to say that a technical subcommittee that's dedicated to helping the Office of Broadband Deployment understand how to vet project proposals and evaluate them effectively, like, that will be a good thing. It's going to be within the state office that vetting occurs. So that's where you want your capability, your competency, your capacity. The state's not the project proponent. The state's not picking winners and losers out of this. The state's administering a program and responding to the technical expertise that's coming from, as Christine mentioned, all the providers out there who are picking up the challenges in front of them in their communities and advancing projects in response to federal funding that's coming through the state. So the technical expertise in Alaska is phenomenal. You've got it on the ground with those project proponents within that industry, working in partnership with communities. All of that's going to feed up and into in response to offerings from the office. And from the policy, the advisory board is going to be thinking about how do we meet all of these goals that the legislature and governor have set for us. So hopefully that's touched on a few of those aspects. It also, I think, to Representative Snyder's comment about anchor institutions. Those anchor institutions are integral to the system. They've got huge amounts of technical expertise in how this system works and what they can contribute, how they can benefit. So yes, there are other programs in place to meet some of their needs and offset some of their costs. But the lower we can drive those costs at a statewide level, the lower we can bring down some of the expenses that the state experiences and overcome some of the challenges that they have along the way. Thanks.
I might ask Ms. O'Connor to elaborate on that technical expertise, because I think a lot of local and tribal governments have actually been navigating this and deploying technology and analyzing different technologies for a number of years, which may position them to better manage a larger tranche of funding. Ms. O'Connor, could you just maybe give some details about projects that providers or local or tribal governments have already been working on that's going to give them that technical expertise to most efficiently use this new money?
Co-Chair Fields, gladly. We're seeing a time of big change there, and it's really promising. We do only have one municipal provider in the city of Ketchikan, which has done, as I said, a phenomenal job. They've done an amazing job. But what's newly happening is in the Consolidated Appropriations Act and the COVID relief bill, $1 billion was appropriated for the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program, also being managed at NTIA. And this was the first time tribes had the chance to get funding and choose what they wanted to do in the broadband space with it. And we've seen partnership projects being proposed in this program, and we are eagerly waiting for the awards to be announced. One of the most, well, I won't say most promising, because there are multiple amazing projects that would bring massive infrastructure improvements in middle mile, particularly. Project to come into Bethel, another project to come into Bethel from another direction. A project that, if it is funded, will provide state-of-the-art connectivity across the entire Bristol Bay. And these are all projects with partnerships with broadband providers existing and tribal entities. So we're just seeing a lot of activity, and we will see more, because this tribal program has been given $2 billion more dollars in the infrastructure bill to go alongside with the $42 billion in BEAD funding nationwide and the other little pots. So a lot of activity, momentum.
Thank you, Ms. Bissett. Did you want to add anything on the subject of experience and technical expertise by some of the users?
Through the chair, yeah, I mean, I agree with everything Christine said. I mean, the local co-ops and the local communities themselves are actually going to be exercising their self-determination in a way they haven't been able to in a while. So I think I've been seeing those partnerships that Christine mentioned between providers, between the co-ops, between the tribes that are getting the money. You know, there are opportunities to combine programs that are coming in through this infrastructure bill. If we're building roads, if we're doing pipelines, if we're doing airports, you know, permitting can all be combined into one thing, hopefully through this broadband office. We get this money out the door expeditiously and into the hands of the providers that are going to be giving the end user that service they've been so longing. I think over 200 communities in Alaska are not served at all, at all. And so we are really looking forward to this infrastructure going in.
Thanks. We have not talked yet about the structure of setting up this office and actually getting paid back for it, I think, by the BEAD program. So, you know, someone might look at this bill and say, oh, it's going to cost a lot of money to stand up this office. But my understanding is actually a lot of these costs are going to be borne by the federal government thanks to the structure of the BEAD program. Could you explain how that would work? Any of the invited testifiers or the bill sponsor, whichever, however y'all would prefer to answer that.
Co-Chair Fields, I can address that. Yes, the infrastructure bill or infrastructure law now provides $5 million in funding to every state to begin this planning process. It requires every state to have an office of broadband. The majority of states already do, but it prioritizes technical assistance to states that don't have an office. So it provides resource and support for states that need to form an office, provides the $5 million in funding. Also, once the state's plan is developed and approved and NTIA begins releasing the majority of the funds, 2% is set aside for administration, and that would be paying for the office.
Great. I think as our colleagues look at this, it's going to be important to educate them that actually these are going to be planning costs borne by the federal government. I don't see additional questions at this time and would suggest that let's do one additional question from Representative McCarty and then go to public testimony with the hopes that if any issues are raised in public testimony, the invited testifiers and bill sponsor will have time to address them before we close out the committee today. Representative McCarty.
Okay, thank you. One of the things I'm hearing is there's so many different stakeholders throughout the state and an orchestration, I use that word intentionally, of things going on. And there's funding coming from many different sources for broadband. And hearing this, that what is the plan to know all those different funding streams that are coming in to conduct this orchestra and to make sure that some entities are not just getting a bunch of money and it's not really using it for broadband purposes or infrastructure broadband purposes.
Go ahead, and then I'll.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative McCarty, you've put your finger on the dot there. There are agencies, multiple agencies, Representative Edgman mentioned them, putting major funding into broadband. Multiple good news and encouraging points on that because it does seem very chaotic. At the federal level, the major agencies have an interagency cooperation and coordination agreement newly formed, so it's not some long-standing thing nobody pays attention to. It is a priority because they want these funds to go where they're supposed to go, which is unserved areas. So at the federal level, they are working to coordinate. The Office of Broadband is where the task force saw that in-state coordination happening. I have heard NTIA is hiring a liaison person for each state. So you will have NTIA having a designated Alaska person. So that will also help with coordination. And the task force vision was that the Office of Broadband would have the responsibility to just pull all these pieces together and know what every federal agency and program is doing and coordinate that with Alaska's plan. It's going to be a big job.
And I would just add through the chair, Representative McCarty, that right now others are filling that space, right? That once there's an office in place, there will be much greater coordination, the ability for much greater coordination at the state level within Alaska. Right now you have the Alaska Municipal League, you know, working with a number of partners on all things infrastructure, including project development and grant writing support and communication. Related to broadband and all the other different infrastructure buckets, with AFN, who has a broadband emphasis right now, with Rasmussen Foundation, with the Denali Commission, There's a number of really critical stakeholders, I think, that are trying to do some of that orchestration and at least make sure that everybody's got the same sheet of music. Until such time as this office is stood up and we can actually see the state have a stronger role.
Let's go to public testimony this time, and then we'll do more questions. If testifiers could limit their testimony to 3 minutes, we will definitely have time to get through the testimony and address it. Do we have individuals in the room who want to provide public testimony? Please come forward. And I should open public testimony.
Through the chair.
Go ahead, Mr. McHale.
Co-chair Fields, co-chair Sponholz, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony today. I appreciate it. For the record, my name is Michael McHale. I'm the chief revenue officer for Quintillion. Quintillion is a broadband infrastructure company that provides services to the rural areas within Alaska. So our interests are pretty simply put, and I think the committee's been discussing much of it so far, and it's really technical expertise associated with, you know, managing what's going to be a huge infrastructure rollout. And, you know, there's a big, you know, why in it for us as to, you know, why do we need and think that it's important to have this technical expertise? And that is, you know, as we fast forward here, we're going to see there will be competing applications for these dollars. And there'll be applications that are looking at coming at unserved and underserved areas from different directions. How do you determine what's the most efficient approach? You know, how do you determine what's the most affordable? And how do you determine what's the most sustainable? And I think that requires some industry expertise to be able to sort through that. So we would be really in favor of, you know, an expansion of the advisory board or a technical subcommittee of that board as well, as long as the interest of all providers, all constituents are considered. And there's, you know, we like to kind of stay neutral in terms of technologies and focus more on the applications and the problems to be solved. So although we have an extensive fiber network, we also operate microwave, we also operate a satellite ground station, and we have partnerships with the satellite players. So we think all of the technologies are important. It's the problem that you're trying to solve, those technologies ought to be applied to. So again, I think it's important that we have that expertise, and that expertise is actively and eagerly engaged in all of these efforts.
Thanks, Mr. McHale. Are there other individuals in the room who wish to provide public testimony? Not seeing any. Let's go online. First up is Mark Springer. Mayor Springer, please proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Fields, Sponholz, and members of the House of Labor and Commerce Committee. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Springer, and I'm calling from Bethel. I'm working as a consultant for the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta Tribal Broadband Consortium, currently having membership 17 federally recognized tribes on the Yukon Kuskokwim River. Rivers. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, please proceed.
Okay, all right, thank you. On the Yukon-Kuskokwim Rivers and Great Sea Coast, under the leadership of Chief Mike Williams of the Akiak Native Community, the consortium is an applicant to NTIA for a hybrid middle mile and last mile system to bring broadband to every home in our river communities. I want to thank Representative Rice Edgman and his co-sponsors for introducing HB 363. And I was able to speak with him this morning, and we discussed a few of my concerns, I think, to good effect. My comments this afternoon will consider the process this bill steps up to work toward the goal we all have in bridging the digital divide and bringing real broadband internet service to as many Alaskan communities and Alaskans, if possible, with the attendant economic benefits. First of all, the advisory board is going to be a pretty high-level policy-making board. They're going to be writing regulations, So it's essential that there's a technical subcommittee for them. This committee should include not only ILEC and CLEC companies, but also internet service providers, in-state satellite operators, fiber operators, other Alaska telecommunications businesses, as well as tribal broadband organizations. Regarding mapping, which is going to be a really big part of this, there is a huge opportunity for the industry and the state to step up to the plate and make their as-built available either to the broadband office or directly to the FCC. The companies know where every millimeter of their plant is, and that's what the FCC is looking for in the served and unserved maps. And if there's a way to do it legislatively to encourage this to happen, that's great, either through the broadband office or the PMC. But again, it's a great opportunity for the industry to come in and, you know, see our maps completed by the FCC fairly early. On process, I think you should call for meetings of the advisory board to be convened in unserved and underserved areas. I'm not saying all 11 members need to show up, but certainly the chair or their designee, a couple of members, a couple of staff should convene the teleconference meetings from our rural communities. It will do a number of things. It will be a more inclusive public process. It will give members and staff a broader view of our needs in rural Alaska, and most importantly, it will help to build a robust record. Finally, I'd like to shout out all my colleagues across the state who are working very hard to make sure that tribal broadband efforts have a voice and that they are successful in a way that's going to, in a way that we can all be proud of. And, of course, Mr. Co-Chair, I'll be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Springer. And I think I missed someone in the room for public testimony. Bob Hemshoot with the Nushagak Cooperative. Thank you for being here to provide public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for making time. My name is Robert Hemshoot. I'm the CEO and general manager currently at Nushagak. I'm retiring here shortly. My replacement is Will Cheney back here with me today. I'm very much supportive of 363 as written. My history, I've got 34 years in telecommunications. I've got 30 years of that in Southwest Alaska. A lot of the technologies, in fact, all the technologies you're talking about deploying here, I've deployed in Western Alaska as part of teams building networks. I can tell you that there is going to be room for all the technologies, but scalability is really going to be one of the critical things we need to look at. This is going to be, in my experience, I've never seen an opportunity like this to meet the needs for the future for the, you know, our state in general, but the high needs areas of our state, the rural, that has been so problematic in building networks into. And we've got an opportunity to get this right here. And I think scalability is important because this isn't about the next year, although the needs are here now. This isn't about the next year, the next 3 years. This is about the next 20 years, 30 years. So Nushagak is actually a partner with, you know, two different NTIA applications. One of them's with a local tribal entity in Dillingham, and the other one's with 20 tribal entities co-signers on that application. So there are really good mechanisms in place right now. There's growing partnerships with existing providers, and I believe 363 sets up the broadband office, leaving it the scope to evaluate and support those partnerships and, you know, come out with the best possible outcome with this very unique opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hemshoot, for being here. Next up in public testimony online is Tom Brady. Mr. Brady, please proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk. I've kind of morphed my comments based on prior testimony, but what I want to talk about is the primary mission of the broadband office and what it should be it as a first step. And that mission is creating a near-term and long-term strategy for solving the problem. The key part of that strategy is estimating the cost and the time it will take to get broadband deployed across all that, and also estimating the operating cost. No one, none of the three federal agencies dealing with broadband today has ever scoped the magnitude of the problem. They've simply spent money. Over the last 5 years, Alaska has gotten approximately $1.5 billion, probably closer to $2 billion in operating subsidies for local telephone companies to keep telephone network operating and deploying broadband and LTE cellular service, as well as subsidized services for schools, libraries, and healthcare. Have we moved the broadband needle? Well, not very far, about the width of the needle. What's the problem? The problem is maybe mainly organization. Is the state needs to step into the role of trying to orchestrate everything that's going on in broadband. The state is the closest to the problem. A key part of this has already been touched on by a couple of commenters, and that is the economics of providing broadband in rural Alaska. Our decisions have to be guided by what's it going to cost to do, how much money do we have, and what is it going to cost off? Representative Sponholz brought up the issue of how do we capitalize the parity fund. Well, when you look at broadband today in Alaska and you think about the parity fund, in order to probably bring parity to 40,000 subscribers in rural Alaska, we'd need a fund of about $30 billion because of the cost of the middle mile segment. That's literally what we have to look at. So economics, the study of the economics of providing broadband has to be a key function of the broadband office, because only by doing that can they make informed decisions about how to implement and spend the money that's going to be. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Mr. Brady, there's a question from Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, thank you very much for your testimony today, Mr. Brady. Could you describe what time frame $30 billion is in? Is that $30 billion a year? Is that $30 billion over 10 years? Is that, you know, or is that capital investment?
I looked at the power cost equalization fund and what it was able to spend in terms of subsidies for power. And depending on the price of broadband, you would need upwards of $350, $400 million a year in order to probably get close to parity. It's a long way you get to that number, but in order to generate that kind of money, you need in the neighborhood of, you know, anywhere from $20 to $40 billion a year, depending on how good your investments are on an annual basis.
Thanks, Mr. Brady, for your testimony. Next up in public testimony is Sean Williams.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Fields and Sponholz, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sean Williams, and I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs and Strategy at Pacific Dataport. In my former public service, I was the Assistant Commissioner of Commerce for the state of Alaska. I would like to take this time to share three recommendations that I believe would help make this bill stronger for rural Alaska. One, address Alaska's missing middle mile. We need a statewide network with ubiquitous coverage that quickly delivers broadband speeds and is economically sustainable long-term without more subsidies. The new satellite technologies like GEO HTS and LEO can do this. Two, remove terms like latency and scalable. These terms are often subjective and not technology neutral, serving only to exclude satellite as an option later. Three, we need to ensure Alaska tribes, tribal consortiums, and non-telecom providers like ISPs have access to these funds as eligible grantees. These organizations are currently deploying broadband to unserved villages in rural Alaska, and the companies they are hiring have extensive broadband experience in Alaska. The last thing I'll add is that the IIJA allows states to customize their broadband office awards, and recommendations considerably to the state's weak areas, like Alaska's missing middle mile. Let's exercise this right and shape this bill for rural Alaska. I want to add support for everything that Mac at Q and Mayor Springer have suggested. I support every word that they added in their earlier testimony. I'd also like to mention that I've previously sent over an MS Word doc with recommended changes. So please remember to take a look at that. Pacific Davenport appreciates that the bill prioritizes the unserved, brings in all stakeholders, and works to organize Alaska's broadband funding. We encourage the spirit of competition and anything that promotes broadband expansion, efficiency, and, of course, lower prices. I would like to thank our bill sponsor, Representative Edgman, for introducing this bill, and, of course, our committee for addressing such a major challenge for Alaska. I look forward to helping where I can. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Williams. Next up is Doug Red Fox. Mr. Red Fox, please proceed with your testimony.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you, Co-Chair Fields. I've been hearing everybody else's testimony, and I'm coming from the consumer side, or, you know, the one at the bottom of the totem pole. If you're taking notes, you know, please, in capital letters, write very slow service. just today, you know, I couldn't even get to my email, and I had a hard time logging in. I would time out. We only have one provider out here in Imala, and we are a underserved area. I believe we have a microwave link coming from Bethel up towards the coast up to Imala. That is not working as good as it should be, I think. I think the best route would be to have a fiber optic cable coming from Nome or right outside of in the Bering Sea where we can connect to the fiber optic and come up the Yukon River. And I'd like to... I wish that that guy that was speaking before me, the guy from New Jagaya, you know, help tribes in the Yukon River to get this bill, you know, into all the tribes on the Yukon River. But I thank you for your time, and, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Red Fox. Next up is Michael Williams. Please proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Mike Williams, Sr. I'm from Akiak, Alaska, currently the chief of the community and also the chairman for Akiak Technologies and also chairman for the Yukon Kuskokwim Tribal Broadband Consortium. I'd like to say that we need to focus on building affordable middle mile, not more ongoing consumer subsidies. And I think the cost should be one of the criteria to the customer, time to deployment, breadth of coverage, sustainability without further subsidy. And we need to promote competition. No need to prioritize certain applicants. All of the applicants must be served and include all telecom and ISPs, broadband providers, access to the funds. Do not exclude tribes, tribal consortiums, satellite last mile providers, or satellite middle mile providers. Remove anti-satellite terms, phrases, such as latency, future-proof, reliability, and remain truly technology neutral. These terms are used to eliminate non-fiber options. Require all telecoms and ISPs to contribute the mapping data, pricing speed, speeds, offered an asset coverage. Finally, come up with a reasonable plan to get affordable broadband to everyone in rural Alaska now. Use the new satellite technology, LEO and GEO height, available to establish and to cover over Alaska. When fiber arrives, hook it up to the existing last mile in the community. We're pretty fortunate here in Akiak that we've got the high-speed LEO high-speed internet set up right now, and we have the towers here, and we're doing this in our community, and we're making improvements because it's the first one in rural Alaska ever. And we are going to continue to help 17 other tribes in our unserved region, and also going to work on 7 tribal communities this summer. So so all of us, we need to work in partnership to do the affordable broadband right now. And if fiber comes along, which will be sometime in the future, and we will be ready for that, and we're planning for that. I really appreciate this time this afternoon. Oyana.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Next up is Daniel Foote. Please proceed with your testimony.
I thank the committee for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 363. My name is Daniel Foote, and I'm the president and CEO of Dantech Services in Anchorage, Alaska. We support end users in Alaska with their computer and network issues. Poor connectivity limits our ability to provide quality support. I agree with Mayor Springer of Bethel that a broad range of technical expertise is needed for the subcommittees or committees involved in this process. Modern technology, such as low Earth orbit satellites, can cover the vast expanse of Alaska quicker and more efficiently than any suggestion of attempting to use other methods. Plus, it provides an offload point for what has consistently been an oversubscription model that fails to adequately deliver what has been promised. Broadband adoption will allow resource utilization to find its best use by allowing end users a choice of services through competition. Providing stable, quality, affordable internet access to rural Alaska can level the field when it comes to business, education, medical services, communication, and the quality of life that the citizens of Alaska deserve, regardless of where they live. Please present a bill that is not exclusionary. Alaska was built through communication means that were satellite systems provided. Why would we want to exclude these systems now when they're needed most? Please help level the field to Alaskans where internet access is concerned. We will have a better state for it as the current barriers to business and city or village management can be reduced. There's plenty of room for competition. Seems like someone said that once. Let's make sure that everybody is included in these processes. I do thank you for your time and attention.
Thanks, Mr. Foote. Next up is Paul Johnson. Mr. Johnson, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and my representative Sponholz for this opportunity to present my comments regarding HB 363. I do so on behalf of the tribes we represent. My name is Paul Johnson. I'm with Nakani Telecom, and we currently represent a couple of Alaska Native tribes in rural Alaska. I wish I could thank also those who've made considerable time commitments and the committees that provided input and feedback towards the development of this bill. I have, if anything, the pandemic has taught us that broadband is not a luxury, it's a necessity to provide our daily lives and various activities that we pursue. So I'd like to bring my comments to basically 4 areas specifically written in the bill. First and foremost, I think I'd like to echo some of the comments of other rural Alaska residents in the advisory board composition, as in that nearly all of the unserved and underserved areas are in rural Alaska, and it's highly recommended that members of this advisory board live, work, and maintain primary place of residence and or operations of rural Alaska. While I understand there's a concern of the technical aptitude, you can always have technical advisors that are technology agnostic, but there's a certain level of knowledge and understanding of the intricacies of infrastructure within rural Alaska, which I think has been one of our biggest barriers. Within the section of definition of anchor institution, we strongly feel that tribes need to be included as anchor institutions within our rural communities. They are major players within that and sometimes taking over major, typically municipal government activities. Eligible grantees, that should also include tribal sector organizations as well. Even though they are, do receive funds from time to time, it is highly regarded that tribes must take the initiative or maybe a coalition would include them, but that they need to be included as if they are any other sector organizations. Current subsidies that are outlined within that, current providers need to provide more than the current service maps, we feel, but also should be very open detail of what subsidies and how much are they receive to provide said services to the residents within rural Alaska. And in closing, this morning I participated in a very informative presentation by the IIJA and learned further about their intention and approach towards allocating broadband funding to states in forms of grants, et cetera. And it was made very clear throughout the presentations that they are highly technology agnostic, meaning that not one approach was favored over the other, and that expediency in addressing the broadband needs in rural America was the highest priority. Secondly, we believe that any infrastructure procured, constructed through the use of public funds should remain within the domain of public entities, such as the state, as well as tribal and municipal governments, following IIJA's approach of open access. We feel this will provide the biggest opportunity for competition, and it will ensure that anchors fund 229 potential partners for the state to collaborate with. And as well as you talked about the broadband office development, it is an understatement to say that there was a lot of confusion and last-minute efforts to try to secure tribal inclusion on the most recent NTIA funding. I would hope that the one role of the proposed broadband office would be a clearinghouse, as mentioned before by other presenters, to assist in coordinating all applicable broadband funding. This should be part of the infrastructure and the planning map. I should note that not only Native people live in rural Alaska, but when tribes and Native corporations build infrastructure in areas such as education, healthcare, transportation, it serves to benefit all of Alaska. Thank you very much for your time and the opportunity to comment.
Back on the record in House Labor and Commerce, Mr. Johnson, unfortunately we had a technical glitch about three quarters of the way through your testimony. So if you don't mind emailing us your testimony as well, we could hear it in the room. But I think the sound system just and the recording secretary weren't able to pick up the last quarter. So if you could email it, that would be great. But all the committee members heard your testimony. The next public testifier is Brittany Woods Orison. Ms. Orison, please proceed.
Hello, my name is Brittany Woods Orison. I'm going to be speaking on my experience as the broadband specialist for Native Movement and Alaska Public Interest Research Group, both nonprofits focused on working at the intersection of public interest and uplifting Indigenous communities. When I first started this role 7 months ago, I went on a pursuit to find everything related to broadband in Alaska, such as ISPs, government documents, meetings, nonprofits, and tribal projects. The search didn't last long as I found limited provider information, seeing few nonprofits taking on broadband work, and reading through the 2014 Alaska Broadband Plan, the goals are expired, there's minimal communication between stakeholders, and no clear outreach to the unserved communities we are trying to connect. I started connecting with national and international organizations to learn from and collaborate with. In doing so, it became apparent how horrifying our situation is when I see the faces of non-Alaskans make when I explain how much our consumers pay, which in communities like Shishamaru can be $1,000 or more per month, and how unreliable this service is. I want to remind everyone here there are thousands of young adults and children in Alaska that are just like me, growing up in the village without access to the global digital economy. Their education and healthcare is limited. They witness older relatives continue navigating unjust living conditions while trying to stay connected to their traditions and land. Each choice a compromise. I'm a first-generation college graduate, and I'm new to this work. I'm finding solutions for my people, my Alaskans, so the next generation will have the autonomy to access their education, healthcare, to have the ability to communicate freely, to work remotely, to make their own schedule, to find solutions for the issues they face. I'm paid full-time to do this work, and it isn't easy for me to navigate this world with a college degree. How do we expect those with limited time, knowledge, and guidance to be part of this movement? Those closest to the issues are closest to the solutions. It's not a matter if Alaskans are going to get online, but a matter of when. We need to create better systems of communication so we can come together with creative solutions. We need to give our residents guidance into engaging with this work and give them the support to be part of this future. Many unserved communities in Alaska have the 2.5 gigahertz tribal spectrum license, and I encourage that these communities are educated on all their technology options so they can choose which is best for them. Alaska is changing. We can make this transition smoother if we collaborate and build these new systems together. We need to educate and uplift those who are living without access. We need to meet them where they are at because as of right now, it is not online. Anabase for your time and all the work and this gathering. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woods-Orison. I don't see anyone else online to provide public testimony. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to provide public testimony? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. At this time, do committee members have additional questions for the bill sponsor or invited testifiers? I have a question, I guess, for the bill sponsor or Ms. O'Connor. We heard a suggestion that the bill as written might exclude provision of broadband through satellite. Is that accurate?
Mr. Co-Chairman, Representative Edgman, the prime sponsor of the bill, no, that's not accurate. In fact, as I started out with my opening comments a while back, we painstakingly crafted this bill to follow the recommendations not only of the governor's broadband task force, but also the underlying federal law, which requires, any service be provided be technologically neutral, and that be steered through the Broadband Deployment Office. They'll be working with a larger advisory group and with Alaskans across the state, as well as the federal partners and the industry partners as well.
Do other committee members have questions? I have an additional question. It seems like it's possible that a community that doesn't have fiber currently might obtain broadband coverage through satellite, and then as fiber is extended, obtain faster, cheaper coverage through fiber. Might this transpire in the real world, Ms. O'Connor?
Yes, Co-Chair Fields. For the record, Christine O'Connor, that has absolutely happened many times in the past. Satellite service has been an integral part of Alaska's rural networks for decades, and we expect it to be continued to be used in the most remote areas for quite some time, and it is a very viable service. Now, fiber and microwave can get you better, faster, and most importantly, more capacity. So that's what the technical subgroup and the full task force really recommended, that we look at it with a fresh eye at remote areas in light of this infrastructure funding. We have never had these resources before. So in areas where just even last year we would have said, not likely we'll ever get fiber here, we need to re-examine those assumptions.
Thank you. Not saying any, oh, go ahead, Representative Etchen.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, I think we heard from the testifiers, and you're probably going to hear throughout, that there's a need for service now in a lot of areas that doesn't have adequate service. Being from rural Alaska, I understand what it's like not being able to download anything or to send anything or even sometimes even have cellular service. So it's my hope that when we get the broadband office set up and the money starts to flow, that we concentrate on getting service out to areas that not only are just underserved, but are unserved at this point. And, we heard that from Douglas Red Fox. You heard it from Paul Johnson. You heard from Mike Williams, others that testified today. And I just want them to know, if they're still listening, that, from my standpoint, that is priority number one.
Thank you. Representative McCarty had a question.
Yeah, thank you. It's exciting to see what's going on. I was working on a doctorate, and I would load up my response to whatever question and then walk out of the house for several hours because it took so long for it to upload. I didn't get that doctorate because it would take a couple centuries. The question I have is in this process here, and it doesn't have to be addressed, it's just concern, is with our technology that we're making sure that our people are safe from electric magnetic influence and such like that. So I know that I have patients that they have problems sleeping, and I say, turn off your Wi-Fi at night or take your phone and put it in airplane mode, and they can start sleeping better just because there's not interference of whatever is moving in the air and stuff like that. So I hope in this process here is we're protecting our people by not intruding upon too much electric magnetic. We get enough of that from the Aurora Borealis. So just a comment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Not seeing further questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Edgman, any closing comments in this hearing?
No, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I just want to thank you for having this hearing. That was fairly robust. Some new things came up that we hadn't anticipated, and I look forward to our next hearing.
Sounds good. The committee will hear more about this bill on Friday from the Rasmussen Foundation, and we will return to this bill and I hope take up amendments and pass the bill on Wednesday, a week from today. So the amendment deadline is Tuesday at 3 p.m. If you are contemplating amendments, please reach out so we can see if we can reach consensus. And thank you again to Secretary Leah Frazier and our moderator, Lydia. The next Labor and Commerce Committee meeting is Friday, March 11th at 9 a.m. and at 4:50, we're adjourned.